that this city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Tell him about the Twinkie.
What about the Twinkie?
So, Tori, I think that I could live a long and happy life and not see another week as chaotic as the last one. What do you think?
It was a lot of fun, you know, and we talked about how it was kind of nice to have a stress-free week without having to worry about how our team was going to perform. So, you know, I kind of cracked the beer fridge open, got some grilling stuff, and I think a solid 12 to 14 hours on my ass on the couch.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in terms of for a team, the best place to be this weekend was sitting on your couch watching other teams fall. You know, it was just a crazy week. What was it? At one point, they said that it was the most losses by ranked teams since week 11 of 1990, and that's when the UCLA game was still going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess the only place better than sitting in your couch would be to be somewhere in the state of Mississippi, huh?
Yeah. Well, they would be burning your couch, right? Do they do that there?
I don't know. Probably. But can you imagine if there was a week like that with Iowa and Iowa State?
I would be thrilled for Iowa, and, you know, it would just be tempered by the bittersweet of watching Cyclones celebrate. So we should probably say welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel.
I'm Tori Brecht.
And we are coming off this crazy chaos, disrupted mayhem of last week. I actually felt sorry for the people who had to turn in a ballot on Sunday.
I felt sorry for people that had to work or go to weddings or funerals or whatever. It was the best day ever of just watching TV, watching college football. I mean, you know, the game that I found strangely compelling was the 11 a.m. tilt between terrible Purdue and terrible Illinois. It was like a slap fight, a bum fight. I couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah. So I was watching the Ohio State and Maryland game, and it's like Ohio State 6 weeks into the season just woke up and remembered they're probably one of the better teams in the country. And you know, I kind of felt sorry for Maryland because we've all been in that situation with Ohio State, right? Where your season is so full of promise, and you think, man, maybe we can hang with these guys, and then they come into your house and just trash all your dreams.
You know who I felt more sorry for, though, because we've been there too, was Wisconsin. As soon as they cut to that game and I saw that it was gloomy and rainy and there were more Badger fans than Northwestern fans there, and the stands were kind of half empty and Fitzgerald was getting all pumped up on the sideline, I'm like, I've seen this movie before and the ending sucks.
Well, maybe they're directing their jinxitude over at Bucky now. That might spare us for a couple seasons. We can only hope, right?
Well, it's funny. I was on one of the Badger boards because, you know, I formerly from there. So I kind of follow Wisconsin a little bit still. And I was telling them, you know, you guys are a decent quarterback away from having a pretty solid team. And I feel like we don't have that super highly engaged running back. I'm like, what if we maybe I don't even need Melvin Gordon. Why don't we swap Jake Ruddock for that Clement kid? And I think both teams would be better. They were ready to take me up on it. They're like, if this was the pros, that deal would make all the sense in the world.
Yeah. So what was your favorite? I mean, we watched you and I watched a lot of games, and we had some other people come in over too. So I love seeing Hail Marys in real time.
So I'll give you my top three moments.
All right, go ahead.
The first one was, even though the play came back on a penalty, the TCU guy.
Oh, I know you're just, that's my number one. That's my number one.
It would be my number one if it actually worked, but I picked it number three. So the guy using the field as camouflage, freaking awesome. And then the lateral. Number two for me was, did you actually watch the end of the UCLA-Utah game?
Yeah, so the guy who got two shots at a 55-yard field goal.
But how bad did you want that little punk to miss the second time because of his flop job? I was so, I mean, I didn't really have a dog in that fight, but you, first of all, he looked kind of like a little Euro soccer player type anyway. And then he gave like a full bore, like World Cup style flop when the guy like grazed the very tiptoe of his foot and he flew into the ground. I cannot believe they threw the flag. That was cheater's proof that he missed the second time.
Yeah, that's Pac-10, Pac-12 refereeing at its best.
And then my number one was the Hail Mary. The Hail Mary was just amazing because the best part is the safety or corner or whoever, number 10 for USC, was waiting for it like a game of 500 or to catch a punt. And you could tell by his body language and his face that he's like, yep, I'm going to be the hero. I'm catching this ball and the game's over. And then whoop, that guy from Arizona State comes from out of nowhere and catches it for the touchdown.
Yeah, those are exactly the three plays that stuck with me too, maybe in a different order. I loved the fact that, you know what it reminded me of is, Was it Prater or Lowry or somebody picked off from Iowa State last year, and the intended receiver watched the imaginary ball that didn't land in his arms and then exactly. Just kind of sit there staring at his empty hands for a second or two. That's how that Hail Mary went. I loved that guy missed. I don't know why he would, you know, the Hail Mary seemed to be dropping on Saturday. I don't know why you go for the 55-yard field goal, even though you did get two shots at it. Yeah. But that, I'm telling you, with that TCU play, there's going to be a rule against that next year. It's going to be named after that guy. And you're going to have to send, whenever you have one of these special uniforms for a big game, you're going to have to send in prior approval to the NCAA with your Pantones of your paint in your end zone to make sure you guys aren't laying down in the font there, because that was amazing. But yes, you're right. It didn't work. But just the creativity of it was pretty astonishing.
And then, of course, you have to talk about how Iowa State apparently had one bad call go against them that cost them 17 points.
Oh, it's the dreaded, you know, three-score penalty.
Poor inconsolable J.B. Pollard. Don't you feel bad for him?
Well, and Michigan had a bad call as well, and I think they have maybe a little bit more of a case, although I don't think that the game turned on it. It was a pivotal late call where... It, and they reviewed it even, and it said that this was an incomplete pass, but it looked clean to me.
Yeah. So let me ask you, Jim, if Barta, after the Florida game, let's say, that where we got hosed on the offsides call and a couple other calls, or the 2005 Michigan game, if he'd have actually, like, called a press conference and started berating officials, how would you feel about that?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I mean, because you picked two examples of possibly the worst, you know, refereeing. That Outback Bowl against Florida in 2006, I believe, there have been high school officials that have done a better job than that. So, I think that as fans, it's really hard not to say, yeah, finally, somebody's saying something about it. And to relate and rally behind that. But to everybody else in the universe, it looks like just sour grapes.
Well, and especially, again, and that was probably an unfair question because, I mean, again, this was a 17-point defeat. I mean, the game really wasn't that close. I mean, you could tell Iowa State wasn't that good. My question is, do you think that Pollard maybe is trying to deflect the, you know, first of all, we know that the Cyclone fan base has a built-in martyr complex anyway, right? And so what better way to distract them from the horrible coaching? If he doesn't want to fire Rhodes and wants to take some heat off him, what better way to do it than to get this us against the world, everybody's out to get us conspiracy theory?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I think, you know, obviously Rhodes can't say anything or he'll be fined or sanctioned or whatever. And so having the AD do it, maybe in some ways he's kind of priming the refs for the next few games. Maybe he's going to get in their heads a little bit, but hey, you know, and you and I were talking about this, I think not during the football game, but a little ways afterwards is I've come to this conclusion that, Iowa State is in every sense of the word, a demonstrably measurably inferior program, team, and school right now. They can't beat anybody except us. Mm-hmm. We are going to probably go to a bowl again. We are going to have a solid, maybe not a memorable season, but I think we're on track for an above average season. and yet, so at certain points, I think that this whole thing about losing to Iowa State, I'm starting to think is really just more of a personality flaw of Kirk Ferentz and not an indicator of the team or the school or the program?
Yeah, it's just one of those things, and it's clearly in the program's head, if that's possible, if you want to anthropomorphize a whole football program. But it's just, there's something weird with it. I mean, it's like we said, it's the same way every time, too. It's like, holy.
If Kansas beats them, if Kansas beats Iowa State, then we are the only team with a losing record with them over 15 years, except you and I. Because Baylor already even the score over the last 15 years. So it's just us in Kansas.
Well, you know, they do say throw out the records when it's a in-state rivalry. I guess we might have to start taking that seriously.
Well, apparently they are. Anyway, enough about Iowa State. I think the Nebraska-Michigan State game maybe didn't live up to its hype until the last, couple minutes there?
It wasn't close at the end. Did you think? I never thought it had much hype because I just figured Michigan State was going to pound their ass, and they did.
Well, but Nebraska got it, you know, back to within a touchdown there at the end. So, and it was just that interception. But it did teach me, I think, that, I mean, what we thought. Michigan State is probably the marquee program of the Big Ten right now. And that there's a pretty big drop off between them and everybody else. I mean, who else would you put up there with them?
Well, we'll see if Ohio State can
keep
going great guns. I mean, right now I would say, and this is going to be the homer in me talking, but if Iowa actually gets an offense going, you know, I think that we have as good of a shot as anybody at being able to take them on in the Big Ten championship game, if there is one. I look at Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I think they're both flawed by not having a quarterback at all. You know, Iowa, as we've mentioned several times, has two pretty darn good quarterbacks. You know, I don't know. I'd say probably it's Michigan State, Ohio State, and then a bunch of meh after that.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's do that. Let's go through the rest of Iowa's schedule. And you tell me if you are more worried, less worried about these teams based on what you've seen, you know, this week and then maybe in the last couple weeks. Okay. So coming up next is Indiana. And we saw that they just, you know, took care of North Texas. So are you more worried or less worried about them than you were a week or two ago?
I think I'm actually less worried. Their offense struggled the week before. I want to say they put up a real low number of points. And, you know, their game against Missouri, I think they caught Missouri looking past them. I don't think Iowa's going to look past them. You know, I think playing Texas State or North Texas or whatever was a nice little warm-up game for them. But I think Iowa has the ability to punch them in the mouth. So I'd say a little less worried than I was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think I'm probably arriving at that too. I always worried that Indiana had a solid offense, but defense was a wet paper towel. I think now that their offense is sputtering as well, and especially since our defense from the beginning of the year went from a question mark to a strength. So I'm less worried. For Maryland, I'm a little less worried. And I think that, you know, obviously it's probably not a good thing to compare them when they're playing against Ohio State. But I think that really what that showed me is how they match up to a physical team. A Big Ten team that's going to, you know, line up and both on offensive and defensive lines and really kind of shove them around. And I think it kind of took its toll over the course of the afternoon. So I'm less worried about Maryland.
I'd say I'm at the same level of worry. I'm actually going to that game in person. I'm really looking forward to it. That'll be fun. Get some crab cakes and enjoy myself. But what scares me about them is those two big physical wide receivers that they have. So far, you know, Iowa's looked pretty good in the passing game for the most part, but that makes me a little nervous. I'm going to be cured. That'll be probably, I think that'll be an even bigger test for the Iowa defense than the Indiana game was. So I would say that one is a push for me.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's a good point. But I think that their quarterback is going to have a tough time getting rid of the ball because I don't think he reacted really well to the pressure from Iowa, from Ohio State. So Northwestern, oh man. It looks like they're back. They're back to their old spoiler type stuff. I'm more worried about Northwestern than I was. They looked like the wheels had come off a couple weeks ago, but now it looks like they're starting to get their Fitzgerald mojo again.
Definitely more worried about Northwestern. I think Fitzgerald had kind of a come to Jesus meeting, circled the wagons, has them really playing us against the world right now. Simeon might be the best quarterback that we face the rest of the way. You know, he's pretty good, and their defense gave up 200 and some yards rushing to Wisconsin, but seemed to buckle down when they got in the red zone. So I think the key in that game for Iowa, capitalize on your opportunities. And that has not been a strength of the Hawkeyes yet this year. So definitely more worried.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what about that kid who had three picks, two of them in the end zone? I mean, that guy, you were talking about Northwestern's defense. That is a day that you write home about.
Igwe Buike. Of course, we also don't have a safety and a guy with terminal yips as a quarterback. So I would hope our guys don't do that, but we'll see.
Well, and Simeon, I think you're right. Simeon may be the best pocket passer in the league. I'm trying to think of who is up there with him, but some of those passes, he was really threading the needle. And that's, you know, we would expect him to be able to do that at this point in his career. So Minnesota.
You know, you know what? I guess I'm more worried about them than I was at the beginning of the year, but I'm still not overly worried about them, if that makes sense. I think they're another one-dimensional team, and the one dimension they hang their hat on is the rushing game. And I just don't worry about Iowa being able to get significantly beaten by a team that's a one-trick pony, especially if that one trick is running the football.
I agree. I think they start to look more and more like Pitt without a defense at a certain point. So I'm kind of the same thing. If they actually get any kind of a passing game strung together between now and November 8th, maybe I'll get more worried. But right now I'm not.
The thing that worries me about Minnesota is that they do seem like they're really coalescing as a team and have more confidence than they have in the past. And, you know, I think if they keep up their winning ways, you know, we definitely could get a real dogfight with them, which, well, we're going to be in dogfights anyway. It's pretty much a given.
We're in dogfights from here on out, except for maybe this one, Illinois.
Wow, I am much less worried. I mean, and then did you hear that Wes Lunt is out 4 to 5 weeks with a broken leg now?
Broke his leg, yeah.
Their defense, I mean, we thought Purdue's defense was kind of bad, but they've been improving. Illinois doesn't even really have a defense. They just have kind of what passes for some guys that go out when the other team has the ball and look around.
Yeah, I mean, Illinois and Purdue were two teams both at the bottom of the league, but they're definitely heading in different directions. I mean, Purdue's trying to scrap its way back up into relevance. Illinois just hit bottom and started digging. So less worried about them and less worried about Wisconsin than I was before. I think that you really nailed it. They've got Melvin Gordon, and that's it.
Yeah, you know, I just don't see either Stave or is it McElvoy?
McElvoy, yeah.
McElvoy doing a whole lot against the Iowa defense. You know, and Iowa has actually been the big runs that Melvin Gordon's been getting have been getting out on the outside. And this year, I think Iowa's done the best job of sticking to their contain on the defensive ends as they've done in quite some time. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think we've definitely Wisconsin was exposed against Northwestern, and I think, you know, neither one of their quarterbacks have a legitimate passing threat, so it's all really on Melvin Gordon. And again, then they start to look like Pitt, which is you've got one guy that can run all over you and nobody else. And Nebraska, I'm actually a little less worried there as well, if only because I think that the formula to shutting down Amir Abdullah is a strong defensive line and put the game on Armstrong's shoulders, and he doesn't really do a good job of delivering.
Sorry, are you saying that you're not feeling that good about Tommy
I am
Armstrong,
not.
Aren't you?
No, I thought he looked really good 2 weeks ago, and then I realized that was just because he was being viewed through the lens of the Illini. He still sucks, and he is not. So, I mean, you know, I feel a little bit, but again, you know, all these games, perhaps with the exception of Illinois, are still
eminently
totally
losable.
Yeah. So with this team, I mean, we saw what they did with Ball State and Iowa State. I mean, you know, we don't count our chickens, but it's just more of a question of where do you think the obstacles are. So,
let me ask you a more worried, less worried question. Are you more after what you saw this weekend and what you saw from Iowa last week? Are you more worried or less worried about having to buy me a case of Bell's Two Hearted Ale?
Well, I'm more worried that I'm going to have to buy it. I'm less worried because I know you will share. I still think you and I picked the break point. We picked 7-5 versus 8-4. And I think that is what it's going to come down to. I think 6-6 and 9-3 are outliers at this point, right? The break point is going to come down to that.
I would think so. Here's what I'll say. If Iowa comes out of this bye week looking like they've really, you know, found their stride, got the offensive line gelling, got the run game going, settle in with two good quarterbacks, and you know, looks like a solid offensive team, even like an average offensive team with the kind of defense they've been playing, I still feel that my predicted 9 wins could be reachable if they get it all put together. I'm not super confident that they're going to, but we have seen that happen in the past. So I think that the bellwether game, really this Indiana game, is kind of a big game, really. If they struggle if they lose, of course, things will be bad. But even if they kind of look like they're still sputtering kind of the way they have so far, just putting it together in spurts and no consistency, then I think that 8 wins probably is the ceiling.
Yeah, so I agree with you, and I'm actually looking at, because we have 2 bye weeks and they're falling kind of weird, we really have like a little mini season coming up with Indiana at home and Maryland on the road. If we can come out of this little mini season and get into the next bye with everybody mainly healthy and 2-0, then I'm feeling pretty good. And I'm feeling like I might as well just go out and buy you the beer now. Because then we start to go into that next bye 6-1, and you only have to come up with 3 more wins out of your last 5 games. And I'm feeling, and Illinois is in there. So, you know, I feel pretty good about that. I think the question for me is, can you put together, like you were saying, can you put together a serviceable offense? Is this 2-quarterback system for real, or are we just trying not to bruise somebody's ego? Maybe it's Jake's, maybe it's CJ's. They don't want to hurt somebody's feelings in a press conference, you know? I don't like the idea of what they've said about we're going to go with the guy with a hot hand. I don't know if that was maybe a reporter putting words in their mouths or whatever. I don't like that idea, because we were talking earlier in the season of how that just really didn't allow the running backs to get into a rhythm. Imagine a quarterback. I start to feel pretty good about the season if we can go into that next bye week on October 25th. Plus, I'll be getting back from wherever the hell, and, you know, I can actually sit down and start watching some football again.
You know, I think the situation with quarterbacks is a little different than running backs, though, Jim. And we talked about this a little bit about how CJ looked a little tight and nervous starting the game against Purdue. You know, in some ways, it's funny that everybody's like, oh, we don't want him to feel bad. We don't, you know, in some ways, being the beloved backup quarterback that could come in and save the day is pretty friggin' awesome. I mean, if I was him, I wouldn't necessarily feel that bad about it, because the way I look at it is they already know what he can do. They know he has the potential to come in and do great. So, you know, let Ruddock have the pressure, go out there, and if he struggles, boom, you bring him in, and I think CJ is going to have a little juice. You see that happen quite a bit. So, you know, I kind of like the way it's setting up. And I actually kind of like, the more I've been thinking about it, I kind of like the idea of getting Jake out there first, because he's the older guy, more experienced, been through the wars a little bit more. And then you kind of keep Beathard back as your ace in the hole if things start to go wonky.
So I'm sort of on board with that. I do want to say, like, imagine a situation where in 2008, where Stansy was maybe a little worse and Christensen was a little better. And, you know, every time, or in 2009 even, every time, you know, Stansy threw a pick six, which, what, he only threw like 19 of them, right, that year, or whatever. You know, every time he threw
something
one, you benched him and you put Christensen back in. I just don't want to see that kind of indecisiveness. I mean, sometimes you got to stick with them and let them work through those issues. And we saw CJ work through it with Purdue, right? We saw Jake work through it last year with Michigan. Remember, he threw a pick six right at the beginning of the game. So, you know, sometimes you just kind of have to let a quarterback work those things out. But what I like, and I think you and I touched on this maybe in the previous podcast, is, you know, really what a lot of problems I think we think of as Iowa problems are that they're too easily scouted. And, you know, teams, you know, prepare, and that's why it all comes down to execution and some things to clean up. because you know exactly what we're going to do. Now, if you've got a completely different package, you know, come out of a drive, maybe you've had a couple of drive stall, and you know, now instead of it being you know, Jake and you know, and Weissman and you know, Kevontae Martin Manley and Tevon Smith, now all of a sudden you've got Willies and Powell and Jonathan Parker and CJ. I mean, as a defensive coordinator, that's got to be a nightmare, because even if you spent 50% of your time prepping for some different package, just the disruptive effect that could have on a defense, it could be fairly unnerving, even if it isn't, you know, even if it does have to blow a little bit of the cobwebs off of it. But having a faster, more aggressive package, and having CJ in, it could give defensive coordinators nuts.
Well, and that's the program I look to that actually ran the two quarterback system well was Northwestern. When it was it Coulter and Simeon, or Coulter and somebody else? I'm trying to remember.
It was Coulter and Simeon, and they were probably more different quarterbacks though than CJ and Jake.
Well, that's true, but it's the same sort of concept, though. I mean, you've got the one guy that's going to be more of a threat with his feet, you know. And so I think that it's been shown that it can be done if you do it with forethought. You know, if you just kind of wing it, I think is when you start getting in trouble.
Yeah, and again, you know, it can't be a reactive type thing. It has to be deliberate that we're going to, you know, And it can't be a surprise, at least to the offense. They have to know when you pull quarterback A and insert quarterback B that was planned all along, and it's not like a panic move on the part of the coaches. And I don't think it will be.
If there's one thing you can count on Kirk Ferentz's team, it's going to be deliberateness. So yeah. We got that going for us, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think that the problem, and you and I have said, is a blessing really, is we probably have number three and number five of the top five quarterbacks in the league. I mean, you know, Wisconsin would kill for either of these guys right now.
Absolutely.
Nebraska would kill for either of these guys right now. And we have them both. So we just need to make sure we keep them both in the game. So, all right. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, is it prediction time then?
Well, I think let's go to our expert first.
Well, it is a bye week, and in 12 Saturdays tradition, that means it's also beer week.
All right.
So, you know, in the past, we've tried to kind of be our own experts and invited some beer drinking experts, but I thought we'd take the next step this time and actually go to a real expert, a brewer here in the Quad Cities, a real innovator in the Iowa craft brew scene. That is Paul Krutzfeldt. And with Great River Brewery. And I think, Jim, maybe we should go on location for this one.
Do you think it's a field trip with beer?
Well, I think maybe if we show up, they might actually give us beer.
I am all for it. So let's head on over.
So okay. How did you get into craft brewing? I presume you probably started as a home brewer?
No, on the contrary. I never actually homebrewed, although... You know, I had many friends that did, and at the time, I graduated in '92 and got out and was trying to make it, you know, a living, and I had several friends find their way over to Abita Brewing Company on the North Shore in New Orleans, and they were brewing there, and you know, we'd meet on Fridays or whatever and drink, and everybody would, you know, basically bitch about their jobs and how many hours they work, and some of my friends were like, hey man, just quit your job and come to work for Abita. And I was like, you gotta be out of your mind, you know. And eventually I did. I was living in Cleveland in a job I didn't want, and one night I was talking on the phone to a buddy, and he's like, seriously man, just quit your job. And I'm like, all right, leap of faith. So I packed up literally that night, drove 22 hours back to New Orleans, and got a job with Abita, and started out cleaning kegs, working my way up through the cellar, and eventually about 6 months later they let me work on a brewery shift, and it was a lot of fun.
So when did you figure out, I mean, obviously liking something and being good at something, you know, when did you figure out you had a knack for this?
I think I always knew that how I wanted to do stuff. I just didn't know what I was going to do with the idea. I deal with less successfully with intangibles like paperwork, office work, where, yeah, I know people are working really hard, but I can't see anything getting done. Whereas, you know, I can pour my heart into a craft, and then at the end of the day, I can see how it's made, or in this case, I can drink it and feel good about it, or I can watch other people drink it and hopefully see joy in their face. And I work better that way, so.
How'd you end up back in Iowa City from Abita? What's the path that took you there, the quick version?
Is there another person involved?
You know, there's always a woman involved.
Exactly. So, took a chance on that one.
That's Scott, and he's my business partner. Also happens to be my brother-in-law. That comes in your next question, I'm sure. But Scott and I were roommates at Drake way, way back, and we both parted. He went to Chicago, I went back to New Orleans, and we worked, like I said, in other jobs. And he got married. I also went to Drake with his wife, and they invited me to their wedding, and I went, and I met both of the sisters, and no big deal there. About a year or so goes by, and he calls me up, and he says, got somebody coming down, will you show them around? So I met her, and she was still at Iowa State, and so I moved back to Des Moines to open up and be the first brewer at Rock Bottom in West Des Moines. Mm. And so I brewed there from about 97 to 04, where she also changed my life again by going to dental school at Iowa. So I quit Rock Bottom.
Wait, so you got Drake, Iowa State, and now Iowa.
Yes, so she's at dental school, and... And I moved back there. I was thinking I'd do nothing more than slum around for 4 years while she was in school and maybe take some odd jobs. And I ended up over at Fitzpatrick's and talking to him. He had asked me to come brew for him.
Wasted many a weekend
many.
Over at Fitzpatrick's.
Sure.
Many a homework session there, too, yeah.
He and I had talked about brewing before, and I went in and talked to him, and he said he was going to be closing. And so I think we had a conversation or three over beer and decided that we would take a leap of faith again and open up our own place.
One of the things that, you know, I really appreciated as a Quad City resident is you really kind of took a chance on Davenport at a time when a lot of other people weren't. I mean, this facility that you have here does fit your needs a lot, but what gave you the confidence, and then how did you kind of build this into what it is down here when, frankly, there wasn't a whole lot going on this corner back in the day?
Well, I think, to be honest, that's what we were looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, property in Iowa City was astronomically expensive. And then the climate of everybody wanting to shut down bars and the underage thing, it wasn't really conducive to what we wanted to do. And Scott will say this out loud, we also didn't want to have a kitchen, right, and it sucks the life out of you. And it was really never our intention to have a kitchen. It was just that was the deal, and you had to kind of take the whole pie, so we did.
Banks were loaning money to you.
Yeah, so it always comes down to that. So about a couple of years in, we're like, man, I don't know about this whole kitchen part. And I'm like, I love going to Iowa City. I love entertaining in Iowa City. I like the football games, but owning a business in Iowa City really wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. And so I had gone back to what I was comfortable with. I looked in Des Moines and all around, and prices weren't really coming down there at all. And I really didn't want to go to Des Moines for the third time. Mm. And so we came and looked here, originally at the Peterson Paper Building and the little yellow building behind it. And I was like, boy, it's close, but I don't know. And then somebody showed us this property. And we stood out the front door and looked and thought, well, we can make this work. And the building actually reminds me of the original Abita. It's more of a warehouse. And actually, Abita started out as an automotive facility, too. Okay. So things were starting to line up for me. And we brought these guys down, and they're like, we love it. Let's move it. And so we brought our stainless steel friends here, and we've hung out with them for a long time now.
And you've been down here how long?
5 years, almost six. Okay.
Because I think the beer garden has expanded a little bit since when I was down here. Wasn't it just the...
Everything's kind of expanded, yeah. I think. You know, and then moving across the street to the old Oasis, where I used to buy Milwaukee's Best Light when I was 16.
Because they didn't card us.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't give a shit.
So we hear a lot of stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
People actually just come over and they poke their head in there, and they're like, I just wanted to see what this was now.
Well, what are some of your favorite types of craft beers to make? You know, obviously the IPA fanaticism is out there, but one of the things I like about coming down here is you don't seem to stick only to that. You feel like you're pretty experimental. What do you like to do?
Well, I mean, I worked at Abita for a while, and at the time, you know, we worked three shifts a night all night long, and we made a lot of the same beer over and over. And then when I got to Rock Bottom, Rock Bottom really gave you the freedom to make anything you want. You could use any ingredients from anywhere in the world, and you just had to maintain a budget. But other than that, they were awesome about it. So I really like maintaining a set of house beers, and we're constantly never satisfied. We're always trying to, what can we do to make that beer just a little bit better? But at the same time, there's a certain amount of, I like to do a lot of seasonals and small batch beers. So for me, that's how I stay very interested, and I get to work on our creativity. And
yeah, and don't rip on the pale ales. I like 483. That's one I always have.
And the herd is fantastic, too. Yeah. What I like is that, you know, you also made a series of session beers, which a lot of other places don't do as well. So I think that's interesting. Talk a little bit about the direction. It feels like Iowa maybe is a little bit behind some of the other Midwestern states in craft brewing compared to like maybe Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan. How are things changing, and what role do you guys play in that? I mean, you guys are kind of unique in your canning facility, I think.
Well, you know, I think it. Iowans don't take enough pride in things that Iowans already do well. I find maybe it's because we're both outsiders that Iowans always like stuff from outside Iowa. Like, oh, there's this great beer in Wisconsin or this great thing in Colorado, when there are actually a lot of that stuff here, and maybe it just doesn't get the recognition that it should get. But with that said, you know, the Quad Cities have had four breweries for a long time. So when we came here, we felt very comfortable with that because the average beer culture per capita is really good here.
I think Front Street actually predated Des Moines and Iowa City in terms of having on-site brewing as far as
brewing. We went to my bachelor party there. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
We all met at Front Street.
And then also
a long time ago.
And then Blue Cat across the river, too.
Blue
so
Cat.
We're early.
Yeah, I think they're all from like the early 90s, I believe.
Yep.
And so that's still on the front end. You know, there's some great guys in Des Moines, like Dave Coit, Raccoon River. And I know he brewed at Wing Coop at one time. So he's got some Colorado experience. And there's a number of other guys that do it, you know, as well. And I don't think we're always behind. You know, you take, for instance, a few things. We're one of the first breweries to can beer. The first brewery in Iowa, but there are not many breweries ahead of us nationwide. We're also the first brewery to put a sleeve on a beer can in the country. Mm-hmm. So, or actually maybe bigger than that. But, you know, I don't know that everybody knows those sorts of things.
All I know is that now when I go up to Woodman's or some of the places, I'm from Madison originally, it's cool to see the Quad Cities represented there. You guys are all over up in Wisconsin now, which I think is a real credit to you guys as well.
Yeah, you see it everywhere.
So. It's been fun. You know, we did a sort of thing where we sort of went out with our cans and maybe did that out of necessity early on. Fortunately, we've sort of rethought that, but we have the luxury of doing that a little bit now. So this last year, we've actually gone back and we've been able to pull out of Wisconsin and Minnesota and Nebraska and parts of Iowa where we're making the same amount of barrels a year, but we're able to sell it all within an hour and a half.
Wow.
So as we come back, we solidify things, and we may sort of branch out again. But mm-hmm. right now, we're just happy to be solid here.
So, you know, I always hear, like, we're living in the golden age of craft brewery. Do you think that's true? I mean, do you see that kind of continuing or winding down, or are people getting tired of it? Because I
don't get tired.
I don't get tired of it, but we're not normal when it comes to that sort of thing. So.
Well, you know, I just heard somebody say it at the Great American Beer Festival. They were comparing the craft beer versus big yellow beer to coffee versus super premium coffee.
Okay.
And they've been growing at a almost vertical rate, and it's still sort of going for them. And the notion is that we're very parallel with them right now. So As more people come along and they start enjoying craft beers, I think their horizons open up, and that's been the case for a long time. But having been in the brewpub scene in the late 90s, we saw a surge, and it fizzled for about 4 years until 2004, and it's been on an upward trajectory ever since. There's still a lot of, you know, yellow beer drinkers to convert before we're really in competition with each other.
One thing I see, though, is that it's not necessarily an industry issue. It's that, and this is with my business development hat on, is that you're seeing a big growth in all kinds of local food, local produce, local beverages. You're seeing distilling companies. You guys, I got one next door coming in here, Artisan Distillers. That's going to be great. And so I think that market for people wanting to eat and drink and consume stuff that's made by their friends and neighbors locally, I think that's unlimited. That's really just taken off now even more. So I think that's going to help you guys out too.
I think somebody made the reference that, you know, and this has been 10 years ago, maybe, or maybe even a little longer, that the golden agers have gotten to a point where they're getting more luxury out of their life. And I think what you're seeing also is, it's like, hell, if they can do it, we should do it too. Yeah. And I think there's this downward spilling effect that, you know, their kids and then their kids are sort of gravitating towards, you know, I don't know, more gourmet cheeses and,
sure,
and breads and foods.
Well, I got my kids on the River Rat root beer, you know. Absolutely. They won't drink regular soda.
So, one of the things our listeners always want to know, let's presume that all your beers are the very best in Iowa. We'll just presume that that's absolutely correct. But let's talk about a few, maybe three or four other of your fan favorites, craft beers maybe from Iowa that you think people should try.
Well, I think it's pretty a pretty interesting thing. You know, having started in Des Moines in 97, and there were actually four brew pubs at the time, and now I think you go to Des Moines, and man, they're in the teens, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think there's more than just able to mention a few. You know, I think the guys at Peachtree are doing really good. I think Toppling Goliath does good. We're friends with the people over at Millstream, and they've been, you know, mm-hmm, knocking it out for years. But I think some of the newer guys like Fire Trucker and New American and the guys from Exile, I think they're all doing great. We have a friend opened up Kelowna Brewery, and mm-hmm, Lou Brewer. Great name. He was actually the first brewer at Fitzy's for a while, and originally at Red Hook in the 80s, and so he's got a long history of brewing.
There's two breweries at Clone Mountains.
Yeah, and, you know.
So is there anything that you're drinking right now, though, that, like, a specific actual beer that you think should be more widely known? Like, hey, man, you got to try this.
I don't know.
Name one of yours if you want.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know. I'm sort of going in the other direction since, you know, everybody's sort of spilling out and they're everywhere. I think it's almost cooler to pull back and have your core people that love your beer. And maybe it's harder to find further out.
Okay.
Rather than, I don't know, then it's available every day everywhere.
Do you ever go somewhere and you have something and you're like, oh, I got to go, you know, when I get back to the brewery, I'm going to try these four things and see how this works, or, you know, where you get like an inspiration?
Absolutely.
From a meal or from a...
No, we do it all the time, you know. Yeah. We'll go on, say, last week to the Great American Beer Festival. Well, you know, while it's interesting to go and see all those breweries, we get a little bored with standing in line for 1 ounce tasting.
Exactly.
And, you know, and a lot of times you're picking the biggest beers you see, too. So there's a certain burnout taste bud factor. Right. So we think it's more interesting to, you know, pick some new breweries there, go visit some old friends at some reliable breweries, say, in Colorado or Portland or wherever, and see what they're doing. See how they've arranged their brewery. What equipment are they using? Is there something that we can learn and bring back to make our beer better for the folks at home?
Awesome.
So, okay, now we got to put you on the spot.
Oh, yeah, we never tell people this, but our guests, but we also make you have to pick the winner of the Iowa game for
this
week, too.
Next Iowa game, which is Iowa-Indiana.
So we got Iowa playing Indiana.
Nobody escapes without a prediction.
Right. Scott, you too. You can give us one, too.
You know, I got a poll for Iowa on this, but, you know, I think early in the season they were talking about how unpredictable Indiana was going to be and how they may have a better-than-average year this year, and while I hope that's true, I don't. guess. But.
So you see Iowa winning this weekend?
I do.
Got a score in mind?
No. You know what? I think if they do win, which I hope they win, I think it's going to be pretty close.
That's a pretty safe guess. I think we're all on
it. I think it's going to be
17-19, keep it under 20.
I'm thinking, 3 points difference. And hell, I hope it's, I hope we blow it out, but it's a very different year in the Big Ten.
I'd say we're due.
We're due for a breakout game.
The game where I don't have a friggin' heart attack sitting there in the
stands. Yeah, we don't get one of those this year.
Yeah.
We'll probably come from behind.
Good prediction, Scott. I like
it's
that.
It's all keeping with our new tradition.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank you.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for having us and for chatting with us. And,
absolutely.
And
for thank you all for coming.
And for the sample.
I'm not going to take it.
Yeah. And, that's it. Great.
All right. Right on.
All right, we'll see you, Tori. Thank you.
Big Cocktail Tapping, October 25th.
IPA.
Awesome.
Yeah. Big Cock IPA Tapping, October 25th.
October 25th.
Yeah.
Here in Davenport.
At the brewery,
yeah. For those who didn't notice the change in audio quality or the background noise, you could tell we were on location there at Great River Brewery on West 2nd Street in Davenport. Well, he said it used to be automotive. Was it a garage or a body shop that used to be?
Yeah, I think it was the AAA transmission shop, if I recall correctly. It's a big spot.
It is, and it's got lots of space. We were in there. We saw their brewery as well as their front bar, their beer garden, and then their warehouse area. And I just saw pallets and pallets of cans ready to be filled with Great River goodness.
Yeah, outstanding beer garden too. And they don't have a kitchen, but you can order from like 5 or 6 different downtown restaurants that have kind of a deal where they'll deliver it to you either out on the patio or right inside in the tap room.
Cool. And one more plug is they did mention, I think there at the end, for those who didn't hear it, that they will be having a tapping party for Big Cock IPA. Yes, you heard that right. On October 25th, 2 p.m. at Great River, and they wanted me to make sure that we got that through. And I might I'm not going to be in town for that. You're going to have to go solo, and that's actually another bye week, Tori. So why don't you set up shop at the brewery?
That's a good idea, and I think I'll buy a Big Cock T-shirt too.
I can't help but think that the name was not an accident. It's pretty. It seemed like pretty.
A pheasant. To be clear.
Yes, of course. Yeah, no, they're just good sense of humor, those guys. So, very cool, and obviously have a lot of passion for what they do, and it shows in their beer. So,
for sure. And a passion for the Hawkeyes too. I think we had 2 win predictions there.
We did, although they called it close, and they called it even come from behind. So I really think they're not really putting their neck out there. But that means that, the pressure's on us. And so whose turn is it to pick first?
It's yours. I think we were pretty close on our final score predictions for the Purdue game, weren't we?
Yeah, I think we both made a nice recovery given that we whiffed on the previous 2, Iowa State and Pitt. I'm going to go ahead. Well, we got the win right. But, yes, we completely whiffed on the narrative and the spread. But this one I'm feeling a little bit better. I feel like a bye week is just what the doctor ordered right about now. I think that Iowa wins at home. I think that it's a 2-score affair. I think they may not lead the entire game, but they won't trail for long. Like maybe Indiana scores a field goal on the opening possession and Iowa responds with a touchdown and never looks back. I don't know how much of that is wishful thinking versus something that I think will actually happen. My pick to click on offense is going to be it's a tough one without knowing which quarterback is going in. I'll just say Mark Weissman. I don't think Indiana has any answer for a running game like that.
I have kind of a funny feeling on this one that we're going to see the offense finally put it together. But I have a feeling we're going to be going, okay, now the offense is working. What happened to the defense? Because I think that Indiana actually has a pretty potent offense. So I'm actually seeing it being pretty close. I'm going to say offense gets on track and puts up 31 points. I think that'd be the first time we crack 30, right? Or did we barely get over 30 against Purdue?
Did we get 30 against you and I?
I can't remember.
It's 24 to 10 with Purdue.
Okay. anyway, so I'm saying that we hit 31 points, but we give up 24 to Indiana. I think it's going to be a 31-24 game, and I think it's going to be another white knuckle ride. And I guess my pick to click is Jordan Kanziri. I've had little bird tell me that he's back to close to 100%. So, you know, he had a couple of those breakout games last year. I have a feeling that he might be a little spark here.
And I didn't give you a score, did I? So I guess I have to say 28-17. I'll just throw that one out there. So this wouldn't happen to be like a flicker bird, one of those.
A flicker bird?
Your little bird.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
All right. Well, hopefully your little bird is accurate. Hopefully the offense does come out and, 5 weeks into the season plus an extra week off will be just what the doctor ordered to get the offense on track, and that the defense, without taking a total step back, at least, adjusts well. So that's it. That's a good show. I really liked meeting the guys down in Great River. I've got a 483 waiting for me in the fridge after this is over. So with that, I guess we'll just sign off and say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.